Hell yeah. It's Miller time.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Dr. Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
The doctor is in. And let me diagnose you real quick. Let me look. You've got,
got a ghost in my throat.
Got a ghost in your throat. Got a skeleton in, well, we all have skeletons in our bodies. And in our closets, some of us.
Ooh.
About what happened on that dark, dark road.
Should we start
15
over?
Years of, no. Rachel is, it's funny, I feel like people can listen to the whole McElroy family of products and hear.
And track the illness?
Track the illness like they work for the CDC. It's like they can draw up like a virality map and how it passed to each person. Justin and Travis and their families were all together last weekend. So like that's a clue that you all might need to chart out the epidemic. But anyway,
this is not related to McElroy illness, though, from what I can tell. Although it may have come from our son, to be fair,
yeah,
who is in fact a McElroy.
He is a patient zero for sure. So yeah, Rachel's sick. We're going to keep this one, I think, kind of short. I know we often say that, but Rachel has no voice. And we just, you know, I'm proud of you, I guess, first and foremost.
I was thinking we should make like a substitute noise that is less labor intensive for me to replace laughter.
Oh.
So let's say I think something is funny. Laughing would take a lot out of me. But
sure.
Could I go something? Could I do something like,
well, even that, I think anything that involves exhalation or the activation of the vocal cords at all is problematic. So might I suggest.
Oh, that's good. Or what about?
She's slapping her cheeks there, folks. That's good. You could also just raise your hand and I'll see that you're laughing.
Okay.
And that's funny that I've said that now because I can make you be laughing at anything now. That's awesome. That's
Ooh.
A fun superpower. I have a small wonder. My small wonder is the Foo Fighters. This is a big, I could arguably do a big wonder segment about it, but Henry likes when he gets in the car with me to drive to daycare, he says rock and roll, because that's just the genre he's into right now. So we've explored Queen and Led Zeppelin and, you know, the usual, the big dogs, some Heart, got some Barracuda in there. He was real into that. But today we discovered Foo Fighters and there's so many good jammers in there for a toddler to just shred out to. And also he likes saying the name of the band and that's good. I've always really been super into
that. That was actually really cute when he got home and said Foo Fighters to me.
It's very good. Color and the Shape, I like melted that CD. I took that CD to church camp one time and then during Monkey Wrench when he's like, the things you said and all the shit, I would like turn the volume down super quick so that my counselors couldn't hear it. Anyway.
On your Discman?
On my Discman. Do you have any small wonders?
I do. There is a Twitter account called Muppet History.
Oh. Do you operate this Twitter account?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
But very frequently, it will tweet little video clips and pictures with little Muppet facts.
That is very good.
Just brightens my day.
I like that. More good Twitter accounts, I think. Once they outnumber the shitty Twitter accounts, then I'll hitch my boat right back up to the good harbor Twitter. That wasn't a very good metaphor. You start this week. What's your first thing?
The Smithsonian Institution.
The Smithsonian, the whole thing.
The whole thing, the whole package.
The whole deal. I feel like that's cheating. That's so many things.
Oh, you think I'm like cutting out some possible other topics?
We could do like five different topics, man.
Well, then maybe I should say James Smithson.
No, go ahead and just blow your wad, man.
So I was in Washington, D.C. last week.
Yeah.
I think it was actually kind of funny because I did an Instagram pic and everybody just assumed the whole McElroy contingent was in D.C. And I was like, no, I
sometimes we traveled sort of separately from each other.
I still have a job that I travel for occasionally.
Right.
And I went to the Smithsonian Zoo, which was not something I was aware existed and was a really great zoo.
I didn't know that it existed either.
Yeah. So I did a little research. So the Smithsonian Institution has 19 museums,
and
21 libraries, 9 research centers, and a zoo.
All in D.C. or like?
Mostly located in D.C.
Okay.
There are some other locations in New York and Virginia.
Okay.
Okay, so James Smithson.
Yes.
Was a chemist and a mineralogist, born in Paris. He was the child of the Duke of Northumberland.
Okay. That sounds made up.
Which I'm assuming is where he made his money and not as a chemist.
Oh, you think that Duke is rolling in it?
I think so. Okay, so Smithson died.
Ah, beans.
And his will stipulated that his estate be left to his nephew if his nephew died without heirs.
Wait, what?
If the sons outlive the nephew, then they would get it. I don't know. It's not important.
Okay.
The interesting thing is that his nephew also died. And so the final stipulation was that the estate be used to, quote, found in Washington, other than under the name of the Smithsonian Institution, an establishment for the increase and diffusion of knowledge among men.
Okay. If I beef it, don't give it to my shithead sons. Give it to my nephew. If my nephew, for some reason, also beefs it, I guess
Smithson never had any kids.
I see.
That's why he picked the nephew.
Okay.
But then when the nephew didn't make it, he said, oh, here's this super noble, ambiguous statement.
Right.
An American diplomat went to collect the money and returned in August with 105 sacks containing 104,960 gold sovereigns.
I don't know what that means.
Was equivalent to about 500,000 at the time, which is equivalent to 11 million in 2018.
That's pretty good.
So just a bunch of sacks.
Pretty good sack of cash, bud.
So what happened next is there was 8 years of haggling over how to interpret the mandate.
Oh my God.
And finally, John Adams convinced them to preserve it for an institution of science and learning, which was then established in 1846. So this took 11 years to
figure
out. After
he beefed it.
But yeah, and then there were just a whole bunch of museums that were created. There's holdings of over 154 million items. And there are 30 million annual visitors to these locations, and they are admitted without charge.
I love that. I forgot about that until we did our most recent tour and I went to the Air and Space Museum. Like, all right, let's shell out some money. And then it was free.
The crazy thing is that Smithson never went to the United States.
So why did he say that then?
I don't know how it was put together. He didn't have any kids. He said, I'll give it to my nephew. My nephew doesn't have any kids. I'm going to put all this great stuff in Washington.
It's just like, if I beef it, my stuff goes to Henry, or I guess the nieces, or barring all that, I want to make sure that we build like a rec center in Kiev. Can we do that?
Even that's more specific than he was. It was more like, I want to encourage the use of play in Kiev.
All right. That's wild.
Yeah.
Well done. Yeah. I like that these museums are there. There's always stuff to do. I like that. I like going to a place.
It's like no commitment, too.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to go to a museum that costs like $30, you're going to be a little more skittish.
Yeah. Kid barfs down the front of your shirt. Or just go home. No harm done.
Yeah.
Except unless it got on dinosaur bones.
What's your first
thing? Been there, done that. I think you're really going to like my first thing. I enjoy my first thing a great deal. And my first thing also has a game in it that I think you're really going to enjoy. And it's going to sweep the nation. My first thing is bootleg Halloween costumes. I believe that human civilization, comedy as an art form, has peaked with bootleg Halloween costumes. And I think it's the funniest shit ever. And it's my favorite time of this spooky time of the year. And that is not hyperbole. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say that?
Unlicensed
Halloween costumes that they sell usually at those like seasonal Halloween pop-up shops.
Yeah.
That are so clearly designed after licensed materials or peoples, but they're given names that could, hey man, that could be anything. Don't tell on Disney or Nintendo on us. That could mean anything, man. I don't usually enjoy copyright infringement, but when it's this like brazen, when there's so much good comedy at play here, I cannot help but just absolutely adore it. Especially because like it's Halloween, right? So you're buying a costume that you want people to recognize the character that you're dressing up as, and yet they cannot market it as such. And so there's almost like a little riddle in there from the costume makers to the potential costume purchasers of like, you know, video game guy with the red hat. Do you get it?
I kind of love that.
I love that so much. It's very playful. The comedy formula of like, I'm being sly, but not actually so sly really, really works on me. And that's just the main conceit here. Like every model on these packages may as well be winking. The models are so choice too, because they're just trying to sell the characters so hard because they know that they don't have name recognition to count on here. So I want to play a game with you. Are you ready to play this game with me? I know that you are ill. I know that you are under the weather, but I feel like this could reduce the severity of your symptoms.
Are you going to say the name and I'll have to guess what it is?
I'm going to say the name of a bootleg Halloween costume. You have to tell me the character that it depicts.
I love this.
And I already did one of them. Video game guy is Mario. So we'll strike that one from the list. I'm going to start with what might be my favorite. Juice Demon. Juice Demon.
Kool-Aid Man?
Beetlejuice. That's very close. Oh. I do like the idea of juiced. I do like the idea of Kool-Aid Man smashing through the wall and everybody yelling, no, Juice Demon.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Hermione Grinder. Hermione Grinder.
I mean, that's Hermione.
That's Hermione Granger. Yeah, that one's very... This one is probably the most brazen. Listen to my cadence. A lad in a costume.
Aladdin?
It's Aladdin.
That's awesome.
It's an Aladdin costume, and he's... That one, the guy playing Aladdin looks so, like... He looks so proud of himself as if he thought up a lad in a costume. Creepy husband. Creepy husband.
Oh, Jack Nicholson from The Shining?
No, I do like that though. And I don't know what that costume looked like unless he was like frozen. Spoilers, I guess. No, that one is Gomez Adams, the creepy husband.
Oh gosh.
Notionless.
Notionless?
Notionless.
I don't even know what to guess.
It's Cher from Clueless.
Oh my God.
It's so choice. It's so delectable. Drizzle it over like pancakes and let me eat that. Factory owner. Hey there, I'm factory owner. What are you dressed as this year? Factory owner.
These are a lot more difficult than I was expecting.
Yeah. Let me set the stage for
you. Okay, please.
Imagine the most famous owner of a factory in cinema.
Oh, Willy Wonka?
It's Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka and his factory that he owns. Kansas Sweetie.
Oh, Dorothy?
Dorothy, you got it. See? Hungry Rebel Girl.
Hungry Rebel Girl.
My throat just made a noise I've never heard before. Smiling. I think I just glurked at a hungry rebel girl.
Oh, Tomb Raider.
Katniss Everdeen.
Hunger
Katniss
Games.
Katniss Everdeen from Hunger Games.
I get it.
This is the last one. It's a trick. It's a tough one. Cyberman or Padre. Cyberman or Padre.
Is it Keanu Reeves from The Matrix?
It's Neo from The Matrix or a priest's vestments. It can be either one that you want it to be. I don't know why they couldn't say Cyberman or a priest's vestments.
That's pretty good that I got it, though.
Yeah, it is really impressive. I am very impressed. You did good. I would say you got more than you lost. Notionless, I thought for sure you were going to swing big out.
How? I was thinking was that it would be a person that was confused, and I was stuck on the word confused.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a trick, and see, and that's how they get you. Because whoever made Clueless, whatever TV studio or film studio made Clueless, saw that costume and said, Notionless, I don't know what that means, and kept on walking down the store. Until they saw, like, green stink giant. And they were like, oh, that's clearly Shrek. It's, like, so choice. It's all I want to do. All I could do is sit around, when I was looking at these names, is sit around and try and think up bootleg costume names. And I couldn't think of anything as good as Juice Demon.
Yeah, no, that's kind of incredible. It is hard to come up with, like, on your own, just on the fly. Like, okay, let's say you wanted to do a Batman costume. What would you call it?
Batman costume.
Like nighttime cave crime fighter.
Yeah, cowled vigilante.
Ooh, that's good too. I like that.
Joker hater.
Okay, what about Dory from Finding Nemo? Blue forgetful fish.
Memory fish. Memory. It would be so much memory fish. Literate memory fish.
Ooh, I like that.
That's good. The keeps swimming underwater friend. Forgetful underwater water sun finder. Any of these works really good. Hey, can I steal you away?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want to hear a personal message?
Please. I want a very personal message.
This one is for Amanda, and it is from Joseph Flynn, Olivia, Kitty, and Ollie. So not super personal. I mean, there's a lot of people in there. To the woman whom I'd talk about if I had my segment on Wonderful. Oh, wait, here it is. 10 years was only the start. Amanda, you make our lives wonderful.
That is incredibly sweet. And 10 years of friendship? 10 years of...
Maybe those are all the kids and the pets.
Maybe that's possible. Maybe they're all part of an elite sort of like roller coaster thrill seeker society.
Ooh, or storm chasers.
Storm chasers, maybe. Crocodile wrestlers in the swamp. They've been doing that for a decade. Holy crap. How many toes do you still have? Anyway, got another one here. This one's for my best and only sister, and it's from Peter, smiley face emoticon. Kat, I'm so glad my infectiously fun interests like McElroy podcasts and D&D have spread to you too. I remember when we were younger, you introduced me to all of my interests, so now it's my turn. I hope the Jimmy Buffett concert is everything you dreamed and more. Of course it is. I can't wait until I'm able to crack a cold one with you at Margaritaville. Oh, God, that would go down so smooth right now. Cold one at Margaritaville.
Are you getting the Buffett bug?
I'll never tell.
You're getting on in years.
Shit, you're right.
It'll happen.
Things I enjoy. The beach. Margaritas. Steel drum.
Uh-huh.
Damn it.
Yeah.
They've got me.
Hello, this is Amy Mann.
And I'm Ted Leo.
And we have a podcast called The Art of Process.
We've been lucky enough over the past year to talk to some of our friends and acquaintances from across the creative spectrum to find out how they actually work.
And so I have to write material that makes sense and makes people laugh. I also have to think about what I'm saying to people.
If I kick your ass, I'll make you famous.
The fight to get LGBTQ representation in the show.
Mm-hmm. We weirdly don't know as many musicians as you would expect.
I really just became a political speechwriter by accident,
realizing that I have accidentally pulled my pants down.
Listen and subscribe at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcast.
It's like if the guinea pig was complicit in helping the scientist.
What's your second thing?
Okay, I warned Griffin that my topics this week were a little bougie, and this is maybe peak.
Uh-oh.
But it's drink pairings.
Drink pairings?
It's when the alcoholic beverage you're enjoying is best suited with a particular dish, and you get to find out what that dish is.
Okay, sell me on this, because I think I am unsold on the whole concept.
Okay, here's the thing. So the idea is that out there are cocktails and wines and beers that will emphasize particular flavor notes in the dish that you are enjoying.
Okay.
And I think maybe what I like most about it is that it is a decision made for you that guarantees that you have made the right choice.
Oh, I see.
I do like that.
Yes, you have paid for the option of you cheated on the test.
When you go to a restaurant and they give you like a beverage list that's like 6 pages long, I don't know how to do this and I don't want to pick the cheapest one.
Right.
If you would just tell me what to get. I would love that.
You've just made me realize my entire wine buying strategy at restaurants. And that is that I go, and you're right, I don't want to buy the very cheapest one. Nope. So then I buy the next cheapest one.
Yep.
Do you do that too?
I mean, yes. Or I will ask the waiter to recommend a few, and then I will purchase one that is on the low end of that few.
I say the lowest one. That's dirt. I wouldn't drink that with my worst enemy's dog's mouth. I will have the next to cheapest one.
I bet if you went to a restaurant and ordered the lowest one, they'd be like, no one's ever ordered that
before. No one's actually ordered that before.
We don't even have that. That's a decoy price.
That is a big realization I've just had about myself. Okay.
So I wanted to share some pairings with you.
Okay.
So this is from Food and Wine.
Unlocking. Well, that's right there, isn't it?
I know.
they would know.
Okay.
Here's what goes together, folks. Food and wine. It's been right there on the tin the whole time. The mystery's been solved.
Do you want to play this game? I'll give you a dish and then you tell me what wine you would pair with it.
Sure. Yeah.
We can stop this at any time.
Sure. Once I embarrass myself immediately.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Let's say you are eating a dish that is made with mushrooms and truffles.
Mushrooms and truffles.
What kind of wine would you pair with it?
A red. You want to get an earthy red in there. And so I'm going to say something like, Cabernet. A nice red cab, deep red, old Cabernet.
I mean, Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir.
It's just kind of like a fancy cab, right?
Oh, I guess. I don't know anything.
All right. This one will be easy.
Oh, sure.
What if you're eating a fish or a seafood dish?
That one's going to be a white.
Yeah.
And that one's going to be a Grige or maybe a Chardonnay?
Chardonnay.
Fuck yeah.
Look at you, classy guy. Man. Way to go, babe.
Thank you. I only know that because we used to buy those huge bottles of Rex Goliath Chardonnay for like $4 at HEB and would eat them with tilapia. Oh, those were the days.
Those were the days. I will say they also recommend Pinot Grigio if you are eating seafood.
Hey.
But a light seafood dish.
I'll eat shit. It's all light.
What about, let's reverse it.
Oh, okay.
Let's say you're going to do... like a Malbec.
Oh, a Malbec? A dark Malbec or a light Malbec? That? Like an earthy Malbec or a light, like a sprightly Malbec? What would I pair with that? Spaghetti. With a Malbec, I would do spaghetti every time.
It says a Malbec is big and bold enough.
Just like spaghetti.
To drink with foods brushed with heavily spiced barbecue sauces.
Ooh, like my spaghetti. I make mom's barbecued spaghetti. Uh-huh. You know the recipe I do for you every year?
Yeah, you take the barbecue sauce.
You take the barbecue sauce, get it really hot, you boil it in a big pot, and then you put the spaghetti noodles in there. That's barbecue spaghetti, ooh, folks.
Ooh, my mouth is
just
watering.
Just like mommy used to make it.
All right, what if you're eating like a spicy Asian or Indian dish?
Oh, that one, you need to have a rosé. For sure. Or something to wipe it off your tongue, wipe this hot spices off your tongue. So I'm going to say champagne with that one, definitely.
I mean, you do want a slight sweetness.
You do want a slight sweetness. And that's what I was trying to say is I think with that one, you are going to want a blend of rosé and champagne.
This recommends a Riesling.
A Riesling. Damn it.
Mm-hmm. See, I think I need a list of wines in front of you. I think part of it is you're not recalling.
You're right. Let me look at all the different wines that there are. Types of wine.
You got something in front of you now?
Okay. Actually, I've just Googled that and Google returned, if you have to ask, then you're not ready for wine.
What if you're eating a tangy food like a scallop?
A tangy food like a scallop. I think you're going to need a Sauvignon Blanc.
Are you looking at my list now?
No, I'm not. I'm looking at a list of wines, and it's the only white wine that I haven't said yet.
Okay.
Was I right?
You were right.
Wine man. I'm going to be one of those professional wine mans that takes the big test.
All right, let's do one more.
Okay, do them all, baby. I ain't afraid.
Now, let's say you're going to have a steak or pork chops.
Steak or pork chops?
Or a lamb chop.
I've already said a cab, right? I don't think I've said a cab.
Well, you were wrong when you said it the first time. Do you want to try it this
time? Yeah, I want to try it on this time.
You're right.
All right.
You are a gourmand.
I'm a bit of a
sommelier.
I don't know that.
A small mignon?
A small mignon? Is that a different type of wine?
A small minion.
Okay. Banana! That's what he'd sound like.
That's good.
Thank you.
All right.
Yellow mischief worker.
Do you want to do one last one?
That would be what the bootleg minion costume's called.
Oh, that's good.
Thank you. Goggled mischief maker.
Let's say you're having a cumin spice burger.
Oh, shit. That's so specific.
And you're looking, okay, I'll give you another hint. Looking for a red wine.
Yeah. I knew it'd be red.
With lots of spicy notes.
Lots of spicy notes. Syrah?
Yes.
Fuck yeah. I'm crushing. I swear to God.
Are you promise you're not cheating?
Look, it's just types of wine on Wine Folly.
You are the classiest man.
I'm fucking crushing it. Hey, babe. I'm just guessing.
You're very good.
Thank you. I was going to say that or Zinfandel. It was literally a 50-50.
You're very good at this.
I have a gift, I guess.
Clearly.
I'm a juice demon. I'm the juice demon, if the juice is wine.
You need to be making all of our pairing choices from here on out.
Oh, God. That's a lot of pressure for somebody who got very lucky at a game that we just played. Can I tell you about my second thing?
Yes.
It's Rudy.
Oh.
Rudy. It's something about this time of year. Something about the fall. Something about the temperature getting a little bit cooler. For me, it's all about Rudy. It all comes back to Rudy, folks.
Griffin had me watch this movie with him, and it was like he had taken me to the church that he grew up in.
Yeah.
He treated it as if I was visiting a place that was very meaningful to him.
It was. I mean, it's not like I grew up in it. I didn't see this movie for the first time until I saw it. I think I was in school, at high school. We like watched it in school in some class someday, or over the course of like 3 days or something like that. And that's weird because my dad has like always been low key, like obsessed with the film Rudy, as I imagine a lot of folks' dads are. And I don't think it's like the best sports movie ever made, but I do think it is like the quintessential sports movie that so many others that followed were sort of like tailored after. And also it's the sports movie that can just like fully fuck me up every time I watch it. Guaranteed this one's gonna get some moisture, a chance of precipitation 100% from these eyes. Part of that is because it's got Sean Astin in it. Sean Astin, my favorite little professional little guy. Sean Astin,
the most lovable man.
He was also Samwise Gamgee. I know that doesn't resonate with Rachel in the way it resonates with me, but it basically all those things add up to meaning that this man has made me cry more than any other living actor at this point. So well and, done, Sean.
And Stranger Things.
Bob on Stranger Things. I don't know if he got a tear on that turn, but he did all right. So Rudy is a film about a small guy, and he wants to play football real bad, get out of the steel mill that he works in, his whole family works in Illinois, got dreams, big dreams to go play football at Notre Dame, and the only thing holding him back is that he is not very academically gifted, and he's also super bad at football.
Does this remind you of your quest to play basketball?
It kind of reminds me of my quest to play basketball if I had an ounce of determination to go play, continue to play basketball. And also if my family worked in a steel mill, it was like, I got to get on the basketball team so that I can not work at a Clear Channel radio station would be the analogy there. So yeah, a bad, dangerous exploding steel mill. And he is, you know, he applies to Notre Dame because he wants to make his dream come true, and it doesn't, he doesn't get into Notre Dame. They reject him. And then the rest of the movie is him just going on this like back-breaking odyssey to get into Notre Dame and make it on the football team and play a game. That's like all that the movie is. And unlike like so many other sports movies, what I really like about it is like this one, I won't spoil it necessarily, but like it doesn't end with him like making the big touchdown and then everybody's like, holy shit, you're amazing. And then he goes on to be the NFL like Hall of Fame champion.
He doesn't grow like 8 feet and suddenly he's super great at football.
No, it is about a person putting in like an outrageous amount of work and like emotional work for what is like, you know, arguably like kind of a small reward, but for him it means like everything in the world. And it's that kind of like disparity that is so like emotionally resonant for me. And I don't know how to talk about Rudy without like kind of spoiling it, but I don't know, it is something about like the journey, not the destination element of Rudy, of just like every time you think like this is it, Rudy's big break, and then it's like, oh shit, you got turned down from the school again, like again, dog.
It's kind of like the opposite of a baseball movie I mentioned a long time ago on this show, which is The Natural.
Yeah,
where it's like a super mega talented player who just is like naturally gifted. It's kind of the opposite of that.
No, Rudy was quite bad at football. It was the only thing, but he wanted it so bad. And I think that that is a sort of superhuman trait in and of itself. Like that is what makes Rudy such a neat character, is like the lengths to which he goes, the amount of things that gets like shit on him. And he's like, oh, well, I really do need to play football.
It's like the ultimate underdog story.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the identikit for like underdog sports movie stories for sure. The last 20 minutes of this movie just like ruins me. And there's this famous scene where all of the like senior players on the Notre Dame team essentially lay down their jerseys in protest so that Rudy can, you know, take their spot on the team and play in a game. And it's so heavy-handed, but God, it just gets me every time watching all these guys say, like, I'm giving up my chance so that Rudy can have a chance because he's just a good, it's good Sean. Look at him, coach, that's good Sean Astin. He's so little and we must protect him.
Do you think it appeals to guys that just kind of grew up their whole life just wanting to be good guys? I feel like that's part of it, right?
I guess.
Is that like, here's a good guy and he like gets recognized for being a good guy.
What I love, the double-edged sword of that, though, is like, this is a good guy who also wasn't secretly like a shithead who actually did work to try and like achieve the dreams that he wanted instead of, you know, just waiting for them to come to him because he was good.
That's true.
The thing about that scene, the jersey scene, is that it's actually quite contentious because the coach in that scene, who's kind of like, you know, the brick wall at that point, keeping Rudy from playing football, was an actual guy. This is based on a kind of true story. And the coach at that time was Dan Devine. And the movie, like, he understood that the movie was going to make him look like the antagonist because it kind of had to be in order to create that emotional friction. But this scene, like, did not happen in real life. Like, in the real Rudy story, like, this scene of all the senior players coming in and laying down their jerseys didn't happen, and that pissed him off a lot. Joe Montana played at Notre Dame during the time that Rudy was on the team, and he corroborated the fact that, like, yeah, that didn't happen. It's a movie and they have to make fun stuff happen, but yeah, that would be wild.
I can't imagine a bunch of players would take that kind of stance against their coach.
Yes. But man, the movie's a real tearjerker. If you like watching little guys achieve their dreams in front of a bunch of you know, doubting family members. The soundtrack too. The soundtrack is from Jerry Goldsmith, and it is so powerful. The last track is called "The Final Game." I might just play a little bit of it, but it's a banger. It's the song that plays over, appropriately enough, the final game in the movie. And my dad had this soundtrack on both on cassette and CD. And anytime that we had, anytime we were driving in the car to the opening night of one of our plays, we would like listen to it.
Oh my God, that's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
To get like fully pumped up. So, I don't know, if you haven't seen Rudy, which some of you out there might not have, if you don't care about sports and, you know, don't care a whole lot about old sports movies, you should watch it, especially if you love Lord of the Rings, if you love Sean Astin and you love Samwise Gamgee, you, like, have to see the first time that he essentially did play Samwise Gamgee, and it was Rudy, and with less swords and more football, but it's still pretty good.
Oh, you know, and it's football season.
Hey, yeah.
So it seems like appropriate.
Toss a pigskin around, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you about our submissions from our friends at home?
Please do.
Connor says, I just wanted to submit my own small wonder, the Bratwurst Man, at my university campus. This wonderful sausage man comes to visit every Tuesday with his sausage stand and delivers the good meat to everyone around. The food is so delicious, but what really makes me happy is that he's just so proud of the product as he serves it to you, and he's so justified in that attitude. The Bratwurst Man. Damn, that's a good, I feel like every area has like a traveling vendor who won in Roscoe Village, where I lived in Chicago. It was the tamales man, and this dude would just like roll up at the bars in Roscoe Village, and he would just have a big like box warmer full of tamales, and you'd get so psyched when you saw him. And I really like the idea of that, but bratwurst, because damn, I love bratwurst.
Yeah, I was just thinking, we didn't have that.
You didn't have that?
No.
Maybe it's not as universal as I thought it was.
Yeah, I don't think the world has food men that wander around, which makes it all the more special.
Yeah, I guess so. Here's one from Elizabeth who says, my small wonder is when board games have special ways of picking who goes first. Like when a game says the person wearing the most green or who most recently ate a bowl of cereal goes first. I think it's just real neat and it makes games a little more special and fun for me.
Yeah, what is that game we played where it was the youngest person started?
I don't remember which one was the youngest person. My very favorite of this is Pandemic. And in Pandemic, the person who is most recently sick goes first, which is very appropriate. Rachel would have a lot. Actually, it would be tough if the McElroys all got together to play Pandemic
now. Because somebody is always sick.
Yes. Well, that just means somebody's guaranteed to go first always. Mm. That's it. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. They got a bunch of good stuff.
They got a bunch of good, bunch of good stuff.
Yeah, they do. And that was great. And we're doing it. Art of Process is one of them. Mm-hmm. And Mission is X and a whole bunch more at MaximumFun.org. We have other stuff at McElroy.family, including, hey, tomorrow the new season of Adventure Zone starts on Halloween. I'm really excited for it. I'm almost done slapping music on Travis's product. It's coming down the assembly line. And I'm really happy with it. I'm really proud of him. And you know what? I'm proud of you, because this episode is, we've recorded quite a bit, but I imagine it's going to be actually very short when you cut out all the coughing breaks. Rachel, I kept asking if you wanted to stop because Rachel was like dying.
It didn't look good there at the beginning, but I recovered.
But you pulled it together. I'm so proud of you.
Your joy has powered me through. You know that,
my
right?
My joy has filled, I think it was the juice demon. I think the juice demon smashed through the wall, filled you with his red power, made you tall and strong and ready to do the podcast.
How is that not the Kool-Aid man?
I know. Beetlejuice should be like undead, nasty teenager husband. Ugh.
Striped suit man.
Prison ghoul.
Multiplicity. Multiplicity dead man.
Multiplicity dead man. I love you.
I love you too.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.